Okay.
So what I like to do is for the speakers to introduce themselves, because I definitely feel that I can pronounce Albert. But I... Okay. Let's just start. Sorry. Just... Okay. Thanks. But I can definitely pronounce Albert, but with people's surnames, last names, and middle names, I like people to say them themselves, just because sometimes there's different pronunciations. So would you introduce yourself to our viewers, please?
Sure. Just with my name.
Just with your name, and then we'll find out more about what you do.
Okay. Albert Flynn De Silva.
Excellent. And I found out about you and your work. It was two Novembers ago, November of 2015, when I got an email, and I got the email directly, and I think it may have gone in my spam folder. And then another friend emailed me to say that there was the workshop with Elizabeth Gilbert. And my friend knows that I'm a writer and said, I think you'd be interested in this. So I signed up, and it was amazing. Not just because Elizabeth, I find, is amazing, but also because there was, I don't know, you can tell the audience how many people were there, but there seemed to be hundreds of people, and it was extremely well organized. Very well organized, and then you got up.
I had nothing to do with that.
Oh, good. Good for your honesty.
No, I'm joking.
I know. But, I just really appreciated how well organized it was, and then you got on the stage a couple of times and shared what you did. And Elizabeth shared that you contacted her and basically, and you were sharing, and she just said, no, I don't do workshops. I never do workshops. And somehow, probably through your work and personality, etc., that she said yes. And so that's when I first knew, you know, started to learn about what you did. And then I signed up and I've been on your email list and I get your emails. And one of the things, you're releasing a new book. So let's see the new book. I can put my glasses on for that. Writing as a Path to Awakening, which is so encompasses this summit, which is write your story, heal your life, which is very broad. But I'd love it if you would share with the viewers more about your book and who you are and your writing process.
Sure. Well, gee whiz. First of all, thank you for having me. And that's a big question to, to begin with. So I'm a writer, a poet, memoirist, novelist, nonfiction writer, and I have a teacher at Spirit Rock Meditation Center. I've been practicing meditation for 20 plus years. And started as a photographer, really, way back when, in the early 90s. Actually, in the 80s, I started as a photographer right out of high school in college, and ended up with a BFA in photography from the University of Colorado, and then went on to study Masters of Fine Arts in San Francisco, also in photography. But I failed my year-end review. How do you fail out of art school, right? Well, I didn't fail out, but I failed my year-end review.
That's why I went to art school.
And I was experimenting. I was making paintings and doing videos and performances and God knows what. And my photography teachers were all, when I showed up with, you know, a film and one photograph and a poem on the wall, they were like, where's your photography portfolio? And I didn't have a photography portfolio. So they said, well, you fail and you're going to have to come back and resubmit. And I said, the hell with that. I'm going to transfer to the new genres department. Mm. And the new genres department is that the sort of traditionally it was performance art and video and, you know, uncategorizable disciplines of art. And so those were my people. So I'm like, I'll go into the uncategorical zone. And so I transferred and I resubmitted. I did some sort of like weird performance installation thing. Only one of the new genres teachers showed up. He passed me. I made it through. It was all good. But then I got into poetry because one of my favorite teachers there at the Art Institute was Bill Berkson, who's an art historian and great art writer, also a fabulous poet. And it's a long story, but he basically told me to go to poetry reading. I went to that reading one night, not being that interested in poetry. And it rocked my world, changed my life. And I realized that's what I was supposed to be doing. And so then I graduated, went on to teach with California Poets in the Schools for 13 years, thousands of kids all over Northern California. And here we are.
And here we are. I'm really glad that you shared that part, that chapter of your story, that chapter of your life, because, you know, we all have these chapters, but how does it sort of, what's the continuation, you know? And it doesn't necessarily have to be in a linear way, but again, we sort of go, many of us go, oh, we're on this trajectory. You know, I know where I'm going. Or some of us, we're like, no, we don't know where we're going. And yet there was a journey that you followed. There was the path there that you didn't know where you were going necessarily when you started out, where you thought it was photography. And yep. Then you ended up in poetry. And I see it as I'm an interdisciplinary artist. When I can say that word, because it's so many syllables. How does one connect to the next, to the next, to the next? And I think part of it is that we don't, as artists, and even as human beings, but as artists, we don't have to narrow ourselves to one genre. That being creative and artistic, we can really just embrace all of it. And I know for myself with poetry, when I was in grad school, so I have an MFA in creative writing, and partly I thought, well, if I do an MFA, I won't fail. Will I fail? But the poetry classes always scared me. It's just like, oh no. And our teacher, Perini, she's actually Sri Lankan, but grew up in Britain, actually really close to where I grew up in London. But she's a biologist, she's a scientist, and yet she's won all these awards for poetry. So it's very interesting. So I am assuming that with all your life experience, with being at Spirit Rock, and you know, for people who don't know what Spirit Rock is, maybe you can share that probably much better than I. But how being at this incredible, beautiful place, you know, with so much meditation and spirituality and focus, how that would and has affected you as a writer and with your writing process?
Yeah, so they're really two parallel paths. So around the time that I almost failed out of grad school, found poetry, a friend took me to Spirit Rock and said, hey, you should check this place out. And I had been driving by the center for years, just wondering, like, what is a mediation center? And why is a mediation center out in the middle of nowhere? And my friend was like, no, that's meditation. So it took me a while to figure that one out. And I went, and there was Jack Kornfield teaching a Monday night class. And he recited during that class. I mean, basically, the Spirit Rock is a Vipassana retreat, meditation retreat center. It comes out of the Thai forest tradition. Insight meditation, it's also referred to. And But it comes out of the Buddhist tradition that is not a religion. That's not a religion. It's a path. It's a way. And I mean, there are some aspects, the religious like aspects that you can find in, you know, Tibetan Buddhism and some traditions of Vipassana in Thailand and so forth, where there is dogma and monastic rigor and guidelines and all this kind of thing. But generally the Western version is very much of an open, inclusive spirituality that encompasses all aspects of great religious disciplines, the very best of religious intention. I think the spiritual focus that religious intentionality kind of revolved around, but that got lost in the dogma and the structure and the ego and the control and power and yada, yada, yada. But Spirit Rock is very much of an open place, a place of contemplation, a place of silence, a place of peace and refuge. And so I went there. There was Jack Kornfield, and he was speaking, and he was quoting poem after poem from various poets over the centuries. You know, everyone from Rumi to Mary Oliver to William Carlos Williams and, you know, Wallace Stevens, just all these great poets. And he even did one night that was entirely devoted to poetry. And I was like, this is my place. This is cool. And I also started to find that just being quiet and sitting still was a revelation. You know, just sitting in silence, it completely rocked my world. You know, I had grown up in an alcoholic, traumatic, you know, abusive household, and had a very difficult young adulthood. And so this place became kind of a place of refuge, a place to finally get real with myself about the emotional turmoil and start to practice figuring out how to be with it, how to live with it, and how to appropriately manage the strong emotions.
Yeah, and thank you. I was, when you just shared some of your childhood, you know, growing up in a alcoholic home, and I didn't grow up with alcoholism in my household, but I grew up with addiction. And my father was addicted to gambling. And I definitely think there may have been some substances involved, but his addiction was to adrenaline. So he was a career criminal and a bank robber and, you know, all these things, which I didn't actually know when I was a child, but it's incredibly disruptive, you know, it's dysfunctional. And that's one of the reasons why I chose the name for this summit, Write Your Story, Heal Your Life. And in terms of, I think in memoir writing, that we are sharing, we're writing about our life story. And for me, writing my story has been healing. It's been transformational. And, you know, I didn't really share much of my writing apart from when I was in my MFA, it became my thesis, but also I've shared with my therapist, and she said, this is your therapy. This is your therapy. So that's where I got that piece. And I'm not sure, I don't think until she shared that with me how conscious I was that this was my journey of transformation, and healing.
Sure.
And, but just having that piece. So I'm wondering how many people who are writing their story and memoir are conscious of that. You know, I think in our deep consciousness, we know that. I think it's probably part of what draws us in to write our story. And that's why one reason I'm really interested in hearing more about your book. It's not released, but it's coming up for release really soon. And just the subject matter really intrigues me. So I one reason I say that is a disclaimer for myself that I haven't read your book yet, and I really want to. Just because the one reason is the title is so intriguing to me. Mm-hmm. So can you share more about your book? And
sure. So, well, there's two. I don't know if you're talking about in talking about memoir. I've written the memoir Beamish Boy, which came out in 2012, and then there's this the new book, Writing is the Path to Awakening, which actually has some memoir in it. It's not billed as that, but there's lots of stories and anecdotes that lead into writing exercises and meditations that are geared for transformation. Say, and if you want the full story, you can go.
I want the full story. I do. I feel that, and I also feel that many, many of our viewers want the full story.
Yeah. So Writing is a Path to Awakening really just came out of, it's become sort of a manifesto for these workshops I've been teaching. So about 7 or 8 years ago, I transitioned from working with kids for about 13 years. Then I got a little bit distracted. My wife and I ended up buying a home care company, and we worked in the home care industry for 7 years. I wrote my memoir during that period. I wrote my first novel during that period. And then we sold that company, and now I'm teaching workshops full time and writing full time. And so those workshops were always called Writing is the Path to Awakening. They started at Spirit Rock, and then they went to Omega in New York, and they went to Esalen down in the Central Coast, and we've gone to Hollyhock in Canada and Vancouver, and we're sort of taking it on as a road show. And the book came out of those workshops. And it's really my manifesto, as it were, on spirituality and writing. And the fact that in my experience, that, you know, everyone is a creative genius. Like, as human beings, that's who we are.
Right.
It's not like, oh, that person over there, because they went to art school and they have an MFA, they're like a genius.
Right.
No, I mean, anybody has the potential if they apply their attention and intention and really commit to a practice and a process around it. And that's what it is. It's a journey. It's a practice. It's a process. It's fairly simple in concept and extremely difficult in practice, like anything that's worth doing in life, right? But, you know, it's interesting you mention the writing as therapy and whether people know whether the practice is therapeutic. You know, I do like to make some kind of a distinction between sort of journaling for sort of emotional clarity and getting it you know, who we are on an emotional level, that can be very sort of therapeutic in that traditional sense, and writing a memoir as literature.
Right.
You know, that's writing a memoir as literature. It's not better than, it's just different. It's just, in some ways, it's a little bit more involved or engaged because you're trying to create a very specific story based on a kind of a tradition of storytelling, and, you know, and it has to involve all those elements of storytelling in order to be, I think, truly effective. Whereas journaling might be very super helpful and very powerful and emotionally moving and very therapeutic in a sense. But it's not necessarily like for public consumption on a certain level. Although, you know, certain, you know, and there's just a spectrum in there. One could go on in various lengths about these distinctions. I don't like to really like just make all these distinctions and separation, but it is relevant on some level. And writing my memoir as a story, as literature, was definitely very healing and therapeutic. But I hope it's taken in the context of a good story, you know, in an interesting story and thought of in literary type terms.
And I think there was something important that you addressed there in terms of, you know, there is a distinction between journal writing and writing literature. And Louise DeSalvo, in her book, Writing as a Path to Healing, I don't know if I got that correct with the title, but she, her research is based on the research of, I think it's James Pennebaker, and he's a psychiatrist, and he did all these studies and basically said it was a kind of writing that was healing. Mm. And they put students through all these, you know, tests and exercises, etc. And I, you know, my belief is that it doesn't have to be set up in this sort of statistical way. Mm-hmm. But on that note, what I'd like to move into is talking about being a writer. And I really appreciate what you said about creativity, that really everyone's a creative genius and you don't need an MFA. And, you know, my story of getting an MFA is, I don't know, I think I just fell into it. I think I was going to do something like anthropology and something else. And I thought, I realized I've been an artist my whole adult life. So why don't I just do this? And it was really more for me. Mm-hmm. But I really do believe that everybody is creative and that everyone's a writer. You know, people would just say, I can't write. I really can't write. Or I can't paint. But I always thought, what happens if we just allow ourselves to drop into that creative process like when we did as children? You know, when we were children, most of us did some form of art. Mm-hmm. And we also wrote as well. You know, it may have just been a couple of lines, but usually in school, there's some creative writing that we do. And then at some point, often in our journey, we get stopped by mm-hmm. something. You know, either a teacher says something critical, or not even critical, but something that makes us stop in our tracks and go, oh, maybe I'm not a writer, or maybe I'm not an artist. And so I'm very much interested in how to support writers and artists, and especially people who may be new to really stepping into being empowered around their art, mm-hmm. or people to say, you know, let's write. And so, you know, for example, this morning I actually, which is rare for me, but I got up and I do write in the mornings, but I ended up writing 3,000 words. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't mean those 3,000 words I would feel are publishable, but I just feel it's the discipline of sitting down and writing. So I'm curious, do you set yourself a writing schedule, and do you have a particular time of day that you feel that you're more creative in the day? How does that work for you?
Yeah, so for me, it's early mornings. Mm-hmm. And when I'm in a project, I do set a minimum, you know, usually 1,000 to 2,000, 2,500 words a day. Mm-hmm. And I'll do that for minimum 5 days. Right. And usually I end up going 8 days because I'm just like, I get into it and I'm just going, you know, it's what I do and I've been doing for years. So, but that's the trick. Like, how do you get into the discipline? And you just have to force yourself to sit down and write shit. Like, literally allow yourself to write crap. Yeah. Every day for many days in a row. And because most days you're not going to write anything that good or that interesting. You also, I found that you can't always trust your thinking mind.
Right.
This is where the meditation comes in. Mm-hmm. Because I don't believe in writer's block. Writer's block is just head babble. Yeah. You know, it's just, you're living, if you have writer's block, you're living up here. You're not living in your heart. You're not living in your body. And so, and meditation helps practice re-embodying your experience. Yoga also, the two of them together, you get re-embodied and there's never any problem. There's never any lack of flow. If anything, you've got, like, I've got too many ideas. Like, I don't know what to do with them all. I have to sort of start organizing them. But it's a discipline and a practice, and it just, you have to be a little bit obsessive about it. And literally, the trick that I use is scheduling it in my calendar.
Right.
Putting it in like I would a dentist appointment or a meeting at work or whatever, you know, that important. If you want to complete something. And if you're just writing for yourself and you're just journaling, whatever, it doesn't matter, right? But if you want to write a book, if you want to complete a book, you want to tell your story and share it with the world, this is how it's going to have to be. And, you know, I don't work with that many people, like coaching-wise anymore, because I don't have that much time. But with my clients, I'm always just, I'm really intense about this, you know, and I can be really fierce about it because this is where people get stuck. And you can't, you know, we get so stuck in our minds and coming up with all kinds of excuses, and that's not the way you get a book done. You get a book done by sitting in the chair and writing crap.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, because, you know, if I look over my work and my words this morning, you know, I'll pull something from it. But it's just about when I'm with my coaching clients, and one specifically, we've been working together a couple of months. She's writing memoir and asking me, well, what should we do next? I think in terms of, you know, putting things into chapters, etc. I said, at this stage, just write. Keep writing, keep writing, keep writing, and getting that body of work. And also, I interviewed a great writer and coach this morning, Morgan Guest McDonald, and we were talking about the objections that come up with people. And one objection being, I don't have the time to write. And so I read this book, The Perfect Day Formula. Hmm. And he's very much Craig Ballantyne about getting up 15 minutes earlier each day. And he gives an example of his schedule. He gets up at 4. So I set my alarm for 4, then I set it at 3:45 in the morning so that I can have 15 minutes to wake up slowly, make my tea, and then start writing at 4. And he writes 4 to 6. So for me, I agree with you. It's about scheduling and putting it in your calendar, because it's just as important. If you're going to, I believe, take yourself seriously as a writer or an artist, whatever project you're working on, but what you're doing is that you're taking yourself seriously, you're taking your project seriously. And that's for me, it's a big step to saying, I'm putting myself first. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that you put yourself first in everything, that you sort of don't make time for your family and your loved ones, etc. But you have to create some time to say, you know, basically this is my project. Mm-hmm. This is my dream. This is what I'm doing. And if people come to me with the objection of, I don't have time, and we know that, you know, life is busy, life is full, there's so many demands on us. But I said to one person in my writing class, this idea of setting, you know, her alarm 15 minutes earlier, she has two sons and pretty much a single mom, but she has done so much writing in that 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the other thing, that we think that we have to block off these large amounts of time, which I think is great if you're in a project and you can do that. But, you know, so you're shaking your head.
Not necessary. And time is something that we create. You know, people think that time is imposed on them from the outside. It's not. Time is your invention. You create time. And, you know, you make decisions every day we're making thousands or hundreds of decisions, and nobody's, in most circumstances, people aren't holding a gun to our heads and saying, you need to go to this job at this time and do this and have these kids and shop at this store and drive this car and have that house. No, nobody's doing that. It's like, at some point we have to reflect and be like, oh, right. Nobody told me I had to do this. I've made these choices along the way and here I am. And time is a concept. It's a construct. It's a very useful construct,
yeah.
But it's a construct nonetheless. And if you take it too seriously, too rigidly, you'll realize, you'll start thinking like, I don't have enough of this stuff that is time. And it's total nonsense. Like, you can always create more time. I mean, I wrote my memoir. I was the CEO of this home care company. I had 100 employees. I had a 2.5-hour commute every day. And it was utter chaos. And I was like, if I don't write my memoir, somebody's going to get hurt. So I got to make time for this. You know, and so I did that same thing. You know, I got up half hour earlier and I wrote for 20 minutes and then I went about my day, or I wrote on the weekends. I wrote at night when I didn't want to. And it's transcending that. It's conditioning yourself to transcend the uncomfortable resistances.
And with that uncomfortable resistances, you know, there's that saying, what you resist persists.
Yeah.
You know, and how do we move through that? And I just feel there's also that part of jumping out of our comfort zone. And so for me, it's, I had to jump out of my comfort zone of getting up at 4 a.m. because I've never.
That's early.
It's early. And I've never really been a morning person, except 10 years ago, I started to go to a really early morning yoga class because I practice Ashtanga. So the Mysore room's at 7 a.m. And I said to a good friend, I don't know how I'll ever do this.
Mm-hmm.
And my partner at the time was an Ashtangi and he was getting up. And then my best friend said to me, I knew it. Only a man could get you out of bed. But I thought it was funny. So I set my alarm for 5:30 to go to yoga, not in a rush. So now I set it at 4 so that I can write for a couple of hours before I get ready for yoga. But it really had to sort of take me out of my comfort zone.
Yes. Yeah, and that's the key, getting out of our comfort zones. Because we like to have these rigid self-definitions. I'm not a morning person, or I'm not a this person, or I can't. That phrase, I can't,
yeah,
banish that from your vocabulary. It's not a useful or supportive phrase.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it's not. And I think for me, that was the other thing about sort of, I can't, but sort of that negativity.
Mm-hmm.
The I can't and negativity seems to me that can go very much hand in hand.
Yeah.
And so again, it's, you know, coming back to creativity, you know, like if someone says, I can't paint or I can't write, what would happen if we just said, I surrender? You know, I'm going to give this up to the divine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to do this. And what would happen? I'm very much into free writing.
Mm-hmm.
I get prompts around free writing, but, you know, taking your notebook and your pen, you know, that prompt to get you to free write and with a timer. And I know that you've done this many times, but it's amazing. It still amazes me what comes out. Whether it, you know, my own writing, but with my writing group.
Mm-hmm.
And much of what's been coming out with the group and individuals has been memoir writing. And I specifically have been working with a group of women. And it's just been profound what people share.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the women has been submitting her work, and she's actually got a number of yeses to be published. But on that note, I'd really like to share with the viewers, because I feel that it's wonderful and amazing if you're published.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel that that has to determine us and who we are as artists and as writers and authors, because, you know, I think Elizabeth Gilbert really addresses that very well in Big Magic, of how her story of sort of submitting and getting the no, you know, and then she tells the story of sending off one story when she was I don't know if you remember this, in Montana or something, and then she's like cooking food for these like ranchers and people, and then one takes her off at, you know, in the night, just, you know, just for a wilderness walk. And then suddenly they encounter like this aggressive moose or something. And she writes the story about it. She submitted it, and the publisher editor wrote back and said, no, like, we'd never be interested in a story like this. And then she went on, and she's still sending out work, and then sent out that story again to the same publisher. And I'm not sure if she even remembered Elizabeth Gilbert, that she had already sent it. And the publisher wrote back and said, this story is amazing. We're going to publish it right now.
Yeah.
And just for people to know, and people, you know, viewers who are working on pieces, not for me to, and I'm sure that you can address this yourself, but not to be disheartened if a publisher says no, because it doesn't mean that your writing isn't compelling,
right,
and readable, and you have a story that has to be told, wants to be told, and that readers are interested. But it's very much, I think, that timing. And that's what Elizabeth Gilbert wrote about.
Well, a writer is, what I always like to say is that a writer is someone who writes, not necessarily someone who's published. So what defines you is the practice and the process, not the outcome. Because the outcome is completely uncertain, and you can't really control the outcome. But what you can control is your commitment to the practice and to the process. And it's so true. You don't know what these publishers are thinking, and you can't write to their tastes. And you have to develop an extremely thick skin. The most successful writers are the most rejected writers. That's the truth. And no matter who you talk to, I know them. I know many of them, Elizabeth and Cheryl, and a lot of, you know, very well-known, widely published authors. They work their asses off, and they've submitted endlessly, obsessively. You can't even imagine. I submitted once to Zizova, you know, Zizova magazine.
No, I've never heard of that one.
Oh, Zizova is one of the leading West Coast magazines for writers and artists. It's been around for, God, I want to say 30 years plus.
I have probably seen it.
Yeah, it's one of the longest standing journals. And so when I was a young poet, it's like I wanted nothing more than to be in Zizova magazine. That was like the creme de la creme of magazines. Right. And I submitted for years, over 50 times. And finally, I broke them down. And they published a piece of mine. And it was, you know, it was really gratifying. It was very sweet. And I don't have that's a great story of Liz's, that, you know, you submit the same piece over again, and the first time they hate it, and the second time they love it. I mean, this is the reality of human beings, you know. They like to be all pompous and like, I'm the tastemaker, and I'll decide what's good and what's bad. But the reality, they don't even know, you know, and they come back to it in a different mood, and suddenly they think it's the best thing they've ever read.
Exactly. And, you know, just you sharing that story of over 50 times, and many people, I think, would have given up, you know, not necessarily given up writing, but given up submitting. Yeah. And I'm, you know, almost embarrassed to admit that, you know, in England, we have our driving tests are really difficult. You know, you have to reverse around a corner keeping 12 inches from the curb for the whole turn. And then you do these crazy three-point turns, and you have to look in your mirrors every 6 seconds. And I went for my test. I was, I think, 19. And I did one and failed. Like, everyone says, you'll fail the first time. I did the second one, and you'll probably fail the second time. I went to the third, and they were like, you might fail your third time. Anyway, this just went on. And I passed on my fifth test. And, you know, if I tell people that story, which I rarely do, it's like, oh, my God, you must have been a really bad driver. But honestly, I drove better on those previous tests than that fifth test.
Right, right.
So, you know, the piece that was published that you sent in up to 50 times, it doesn't necessarily mean, and I'm sure you will affirm this, that it was better than the other pieces. It's sort of going back to Elizabeth's story that, you know, it's whoever, you know, she said she doesn't know what frame of mind the publisher was in the first time. You know, maybe she was getting divorced, you know, maybe the dog died, maybe it was just like nothing is readable right now. But just to keep pursuing. And
a lot of it is timing and positioning, right. Really. Yeah. You know, timing in that it happens to be a work that's resonant with that particular person at that particular time. And also that you're engaged in community, that you actually understand the magazine and what it is and what their desires are. You know, a lot of people just send out blindly. They're like, oh, I heard that's a cool magazine.
Right.
Whether or not their work relates to what their themes are or what their the style that they're looking at. Each journal is very specific to that end, right? So you have to study these things and participate. You know, it turns out that Ziziba had hosted a little mini conference in San Francisco. And so I got to meet the editor. I met the editor of New American Writing, Paul Hoover, at that conference. And I kind of stayed in touch. I saw him in a couple other readings. And then I had some new poems a couple years later, and I wrote to him. I said, hey, you know, dear Paul, here are some poems. We met a couple of years. And he's like, oh, yeah. You know, if somebody knows you and has met you or is familiar with your name somehow, the work is actually going to have a little bit more resonance.
Yes.
Plus, they know you're engaged in the community. They know you're committed,
yeah.
Rather than just sort of coming from left field.
Exactly. And I think it goes back to commitment in terms of, do you, you know, part of questions I've been asking people in the seminar, in the summit is, do you want to turn your creativity into your living, you know, being an entrepreneur? And there is a way that, you know, someone said to me when I was studying for my MFA, oh, so what are you going to do with your MFA? I mean, my sister-in-law has an MFA, and she just works in Starbucks. And it's mm-hmm. another one of those, oh, do I want to listen to other people?
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel that if you're a creative thinker, that you can create a business, you can create a stream of income.
Mm-hmm.
Very much connected to your creativity. And the truth of the matter is that, you know, I've been working as an artist all my adult life. And I had a real job for about 6 weeks as I was transitioning, leaving school and then going on the road with a band.
Mm-hmm.
But I was able, you know, and there's, as you know, there's sort of pros and cons working for yourself and having your own business. But I very much believe that if you stick with it, and that's what you were saying with writing, if you stick with it, there is that, you know, I don't necessarily believe that, you know, we're just manifesting out of thin air.
Mm-hmm.
I love to feel and do believe like the divine is supporting you if you're on your right path. But there's also the steps and the creative steps, but also there are things that we have to do. And if we're passionate about that, then we can make that happen. And that's one reason why I'm really, you know, when I found out about the work that you did at Elizabeth's workshop, I was like, this is someone who is actually making it happen, you know, that what you were interested in, you know, putting on this great workshop. And I know you have a couple of workshops coming up, mm-hmm. and I think one will already be happening before the summit's released, although it might be able to go into the promotion period that people will hear about it. And I think you have another one in June. Do you have another one coming up in June?
I have a zillion of them, but the big ones are, yeah, so this is part of how I've been making my living is doing my own workshops. I do a lot of workshops at Spirit Rock, and the Omega Institute is in May. That's in New York. So I don't know where people are listening, but
all over.
Yeah. Oh, great. Okay. Well, so New York, the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, May 26th through 29th. I'm doing this Asilomar event May 5th through 7th. And then I've got the most exciting thing that's happening this year, I think, is a workshop in Maui that I'm doing with Dani Shapiro, the great memoirist.
Oh, yes. Yes, Dani. Yeah. Yeah. She's just released a new book, I think.
Yeah, she's got a brand new book called Hourglass. Yeah. And so she'll be with us November 2nd through the 6th in Maui. And that's going to be an amazing week. I did this event with Cheryl Strayed 2 years ago, and it was pretty much the highlight of my life. And so that's going to be remarkable. But in terms of like, how do we do this? How do we make a living as a writer? It's, you know, part of my strategy was to, well, my wife is a social worker. She wants to start this home care company. Well, maybe I'll do that with her and I'll learn about marketing, and I mean, we got to do something. Be alive in Northern California. Yeah. And so we started this company and well, we didn't start it from the ground up. We bought into this thing, but it became really pretty successful. And then we sold it. And my whole intention was always like, okay, I can, you know, I want to try and put enough, squirrel away enough money that I can invest in a workshop business. You know, that I have a little bit of money that I can start doing my own teaching, that I can, you know, hire someone like Elizabeth Gilbert, put on a big event, keep inspiring people, because I get so inspired from these kinds of events that I want to give people the opportunity to do that. And so all my events revolve around the practice of writing. So it's not just lecture, it's not just sharing ideas, but it's actually nitty gritty getting into the experience and practice of writing. And in my case, practice of meditation and yoga. And so this is where it's going. It's a grand experiment. We don't know where it will go, but so far it's been a lot of fun.
And that's really where I want to think and feel that we can make this fun. We can make writing fun. Mm-hmm. We can make creativity fun. And if that's what we want to do as individuals, and maybe individual viewers who are watching this, of turning the creativity into a business and entrepreneurship, that we make it fun. And we know that building a business can take a lot of time and focus, but really making that fun. And it's just so important, you know, because life will throw you challenges. So how can we stay in the fun with our creativity?
Well, yeah, and as creative people, we're not business people necessarily, most of us.
Yes.
You know, and I would include myself in that. I'm not particularly organized. I'm not good with numbers. I'm good with words. Right. Yeah, for me to deal with numbers is like not a good idea. So we've got to figure out how do we delegate, right? How do we get the number experts to do the numbers?
Exactly.
And the marketing experts to do the marketing, and you focus on the, you know, whatever your strengths are.
Yes.
I think it's important.
It is. It's really important to delegate. And I see that with my own business. It's like, okay, well, I'm good at this, but I'm not necessarily good at my filing and organizing and making those files. Once they're made for me, I can just pop those pieces of paper in. But it's really important to see our strength. And I think that's, I definitely resonate with that, that if you're an artist, you're not necessarily a business person. And then there's these artists who are incredible business people. You know, like, who's the artist? Is it Jeff Koons?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's 100% businessman. He makes that happen.
I know these guys and women who end up convincing a major foundations to invest like literally millions of dollars in their like wacky art ideas. I think it's quite genius, really.
It is genius. I mean, some of the British contemporary artists that came out with, you know, Damien Hirst and Tracy Emmons and all those.
Oh, people, yeah.
They're like, you've got a dead cow and you're selling that for how many millions?
Right. It's kind of like a bad joke or a great joke, depending. But they don't teach you this in art school, right? They don't, you're on your own. I mean, when I was at the Art Institute in the early 90s, you know, they didn't even have an office of like, what do you call it when you go out into the world, counselors, like peer,
yes,
like
yes.
career counselors.
Career counselors.
They didn't know what are you expecting to do with an MFA in photography? Or, I mean, at least as a photographer, you could, you know, you can do commercial photography or whatever. But when I told my parents after I graduated that I wanted to be a poet, you can imagine how that went over.
I can imagine. I know. I just, I think sometimes even my family, they're still trying to figure out what I do. And especially because one half of my family are in the home care business.
Okay. So you know this well.
And they work really hard and they, you know, do really well. And I think they're still trying to figure out, so what does your sister do? But I was going to say something on that note of sort of, when I was doing my MFA at California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco, they actually had a class, The Artist in the World.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad that I took that class because it really was about what do you do next? You know, sort of having your artist statement, having your bio. They wanted us to have a website, you know, mm-hmm. and they encouraged us to build our own website. So I actually built my own artist website. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how starting off on my new business, that's been so helpful. And you had to have your business card done by the end of the class.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very practical because usually, you know, I left, you know, with having my BA going, what do I do with a BA? And left like, you know, the junior college with an associate's degree and like, what do you do with that?
Right.
So we are getting towards the end of our 60 Minutes. Isn't there an American TV program, 60 Minutes? I don't watch TV. I think it's been on forever.
Yeah.
But I'd like to, again, show your book because I really want the viewers to know about your book. Writing is a Path to Awakening.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. And
about September 1st.
September 1st. Excellent. And we didn't discuss if you wanted to offer a free gift to our viewers, if they want to hop over to your site, they'll find out more about you. That's totally up to you.
Yeah, you know, I do have one thing I do have that is a free gift, actually. If people go to the site, I have a new, it's a relatively new, actually it is, it's pretty much brand new, Creativity Meditations for Writers and Artists. And it's an audio program, but there's the free meditation download. And so if you go to albertflindesilver.com and then you click on the audio program link, it'll take you to the free download. And it's a great way to just get introduced to meditation. It's a very basic intro meditation, specifically geared for writers and artists. So I think people will enjoy that, and it's a nice gateway. And if you're interested in the rest of the program, there's a whole link you can go through. But the intro is 15 minutes. It's a nice guided meditation. And this is how we break through that conditioning in order to free up the creativity, in order to free up the true genius that's hidden within us.
That is perfect. It really is perfect. And what we'll have actually on this video and all the links, but for the viewers, we'll actually put your website there so it's an easy click. So
yeah, great.
People don't have to memorize it because, you know, I'm terrible at memorizing things. The older I get, it's like if I don't write it down, it's gone.
Writing is the Path to Awakening comes out September 1st, but it's currently available for pre-order on Amazon and also through your local bookstore.
Great. And,
so.
Wonderful. I really appreciate you finding time because I know that you're in this busy period. You've got this workshop coming up in a couple of weeks, and working on the book, you know, and all the things that it takes to get the book out and do interviews and everything.
Not to mention the two novels. We didn't even talk about those.
Wow, two novels too. Yeah, so I plan to do more summits in the future. So
great.
I'd love to interview you and invite you back because I've really enjoyed us talking together. It's been really inspiring, and I'm sure it's been very inspiring for the viewers as well.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me, Laura.
Thank you.